like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
What's on your mind? She's getting real, not afraid to feel. Take her soul to soul, just let it flow. No one can do it quite like Caroline. It's time for Caroline.
I'm so excited to be here on Get Real Podcast with Terry Clark.
Hi.
Who would have ever thunk my younger self that I would be sitting down with you? You are like truly one of the artists that, and I'm not saying this to be like, because you came out when I was probably in high school, and
you look like you're still in high school. So when you're saying your younger self, I'm like,
well, you haven't aged either, Terry. You look the same as you do when you came out. Like, was it almost 30 years ago?
It was 1995. So 29 years ago.
With your very first single. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh. So almost 29 years ago, you look the same. You look exactly the same. What is your secret to it?
My mom, her genes, my mom's family, like my grandmother. And thank you for saying that's very sweet. But I blame my mom's family on that. And the, you know, it's funny because I had an injury and the orthopedic surgeon said, you've got a lot of elasticity to your joints and your skin, which will keep you looking young, but don't do anything crazy with your arms and legs or you could really hurt yourself and just dislocate very easily.
But you do a lot of crazy things. Like, and I was watching your Instagram, which also I'm super impressed with you because, okay, like I said, you kind of came out when you came out 30 years ago when I was in high school. You were like the queen of the airways. You have maintained that queen status, your beauty, your talent, your presence in country music, and now it's like everyone's repeating your fashion too. You know, they say trends repeat like every 30 years. Lainey Wilson with a cowboy hat accepting her Grammy. Are you like, you're welcome, Lainey?
Well, you know what? I saw that, and I've seen a lot of Beyonce was wearing
Beyonce's
hat the other
country
night, and I'm like, and I'm not taking credit for it,
you
but hey, I feel
credit.
Like I might have been the first one to kind of do that, but
you
it
were.
Was, yeah, it's really cool. And I love seeing these women wearing like the authentic felt Texas cattleman style actual cowboy hat. And it's totally made a comeback and everybody's doing it. I feel like people are actually going to think that I'm chasing a fashion.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. Everyone knows you're the original. You're the OG.
Thank you.
So you started when you were a teen, mm-hmm. started entering competitions. Like at 17, you're entering a talent competition in Canada.
Yeah.
And I saw that you actually won it, but nobody told you. You thought you lost because you're underage.
Yeah. It's an interesting story because I was in this talent contest that started at a local level, and I wasn't old enough to even be in the bar where I was supposed to be competing for this. So I had to wait in the alley to hear the results with my mom and my guitar. And so then they told me I won. And then I went to a provincial talent contest, which is the same as a state, for those of you who don't know. So I competed on that level and won that one. And I was the youngest one in that competition. These were all like people in their 30s, 40s playing clubs and stuff. And then the CCMA, which is the equivalent of the CMAs, you know, was a national thing. And I went to the national contest. I'm still underage. I compete. Well, first of all, at soundcheck. It was a house band. All the other contestants in the band that was playing were all telling me that I had it in the bag and I was going to win it. They were all so sweet. The other competitors were like, oh my God, I'm just going to go home now and stuff like that. So
you were awesome from the beginning.
Well,
you
I don't knew, know about that.
No, you knew that this is what you were supposed to do.
Well, I knew I wanted to do it. I was very driven and I'm so passionate about it. And so, but yeah, they were all patting me on the back and saying, we'll buy you a burger after or whatever. And when it came time to name off who had won, they named third place and then second place. My mom and I are standing in the wings and we're thinking that I actually won.
She can win.
And then first place, and I was nowhere in any of the places. And
you knew you crushed it.
Yeah, everybody was telling me
that. And everybody knew you crushed it.
So I went from crushing it to being crushed really quick. And my mom and I...
The story of the music industry, right?
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because if you look at things like building blocks instead of roadblocks, what I found out 10 years later when I was winning awards up there at the Canadian Country Music Awards, one of the judges who had been at that talent contest came to me at the party after and he said, there's something you probably don't realize. I was a judge in that contest 10 years ago when you were, you know, 17 years old, and you lost because it was sponsored by Budweiser and they couldn't have an underage contestant winning. Like you couldn't even be in it. You technically won, but they had to disqualify. I got disqualified.
Well, shouldn't they have let you know ahead of time that you couldn't have even been in it?
Mm-hmm.
That would have been good information.
Yeah.
The politics of it all, you know, that's so much of it is politics, right?
It really is. But I would have won a Canadian record deal. I would have probably not have come to Nashville when I did, which could have changed the entire trajectory of my entire career. So you look at things like in the moment, like this is the worst thing. It's going to, I'm just going to die crying and bawling. And it was really for the best. And it was meant to be that way.
Isn't that the crazy little mystery about life is like you said, when you're in the moment, especially when you're young in the moment like that, mm-hmm. and it's the first time you've had like these crushing blows to your soul, but then you find out the rabbit trail leads you to the clue later that finally you get the golden nugget and you're like, oh.
You don't know that when you're young though, because you're so in the moment, which I wish I could be more. I mean, all of us as adults, I think we wish we could be more present in the moment, but when you're young, your whole future's ahead of you, and that's all you can think about. But you're also not playing the tape forward to, like, maybe this is meant to be. You're just not that philosophical at 17.
Because you're not sure anything's going to happen.
Right. I just want it now. I want everything right now.
Yeah. I know. Okay. So then, because you lost, is that what catapulted you to move to Nashville the next year?
Well, yeah. My mom, who was a very, you know, very instrumental in all of this.
She is? How so? Tell me about your mom.
Well, my mom passed away 10 years ago, or 13 years ago now, and
so
she
sorry.
Was, thank you, but she
you
was
had a great mom. She inducted
like
you into the Opry too. She was there
amazing.
When you were on the stage.
Yeah, she was amazing. And cancer, you know, it just, so many people have been lost to that. And
was she your biggest cheerleader?
She was.
She the reason you had all the courage to keep doing this?
Yeah, she did. And she was a young mother. Like she was only 60 when she passed away. But I mean, when I look at how old she was when I was 17, she was in her 30s, you know, and she was almost...
She was in her 30s?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, she was almost as naive as she was in her early 30s.
So she was right there in the middle of it all with you. Like, your dream mm-hmm. was her dream?
It was, and she played guitar. She taught me my first few chords, and she kind of coached me. You know, I'd sit in the kitchen and sing, and she'd be like, oh, you need to, you know, raise or lower the key on this and that, and she'd be like, yeah. And she was sort of I bounced everything off of her.
Backboard.
Yeah. So, when we went to that contest and I lost, and all the way, we drove home from there and it was like a 3-hour drive. It was in Alberta and I was crying my eyes out. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing your kid brokenhearted like that.
I can't imagine.
I thought, if I can't win, how am I going to make it in Nashville? How am I going to ever make it? And she was angry because she didn't understand what had happened.
Because she knew you should have won too.
And she said, I'm taking you to Nashville. Just forget all of this.
That's
we're just
what she
going
said?
To Nashville. Yeah, just let's bypass all of this and go to Nashville.
Stop it.
Yeah,
that makes me teary.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, and we, I moved to Nashville without any way of working. I wasn't
she came
legal.
With you?
Yeah, for a week.
Oh, only for a week?
We drove down. It's a long story. You know, it was about a year and a half, 2 years after that I finally got here. But we drove down in a Honda Civic with one of her best friends of her whole life, who'd known me since I was a baby. The three of us loaded the car and drove across the border and told the border official we were going to the Grand Ole Opry because he saw the guitar in the back seat. But that was when I could fit everything I owned in a trunk and a back seat of a Honda Civic. And they drove me down, and my little brother was 5 years old at the time. So my mom was like, we're going to get you set up. We'll figure it out when we get there. I mean, I couldn't get a job. I didn't have a green card. I didn't have a social security number. I didn't have a car.
Terry, so, were you terrified?
It was so stupid. I was like, what the hell were we
doing? Were you so scared? I would have been petrified. I mean, actually, I moved to Nashville. I was 19. But like at the same time, it's like I had my parents still in the United States.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It wasn't like I could go to Arkansas or Alabama or Mississippi for dinner.
No.
Like on Sunday or drive home. This was 2,000 miles in
so
a foreign country.
Where'd you live? What'd you do in a foreign country?
Not only a foreign country, but the southern United States. Like there were things that I'd never experienced in Canada,
like
on the
what?
Prairies of Canada. Just
on the prairies.
Just
Canada.
Like
there are a lot of prairies in Canada.
Yes, we. We also celebrate Christmas.
We also celebrate Christmas. Wait, what do you mean?
Do you have prairies in Canada?
Oh, like no, you're normal.
I'm
you have Christmas?
You. I'm teasing
like
you.
There's
yeah.
grass.
Yes,
okay.
There's
oh,
grass.
Okay. I'm Vaughn, Terry. Give me a break, okay?
I know. I'm teasing. But seriously, I was terrified. And it was just, okay, the climate, first of all. I mean, the humidity. Just in Canada, there's just differences. There's cultural differences. And I was a kid. I didn't know anything. Like I was just so green, really green. So I experienced things and wound up on playing at Tootsie's Orchid Lounge on Lower Broadway.
A great place to wind up. Back in the day, that was kind of the golden ticket, a little bit.
Well, not that day. 1987 on Lower Broadway. Has anybody, do you know what the Lower Broadway was like in 1987?
Was it a little like a
it
little
scary.
Risque?
It,
not risque, a little scary.
Scary. Sketchy.
Like some scary stuff went down. Like
it was Skid Row. It was like, okay, a lot of these bars that are now have country stars names on them, they were boarded up. Like there was plywood on the
So Nashville was not hopping so much.
No, not at all. And, so me and my mom and her friend Pat went into Tootsie's Orchid Lounge just as tourists.
And your mom's like, okay, I'm going to drop you off here and you're going to work here every day and bye. You got this, Terry.
Not quite how it happened, but we went in and like we were trying to figure out how I was going to pay rent and make money. And they had found a place for me to live in Tusculum, which is like Bell Road and Nolensville Road.
But you didn't have a car.
I didn't have a car.
So how are you going to?
I got a bus pass.
Okay. Gosh, I love you had the hunger so hard for your dream.
I had a bus pass, yeah. And
you had a bus pass.
But before they left to go back to Canada, my mom could only stay for so long. My brother was 5 years old and she had a family back there. And so we found a place for me to live. I rented a room from a woman who worked the night shift at a factory. And she had a 2-year-old son and she was separated from her husband, who was temporarily moved out and ended up moving back in at some point. And that's a whole other story.
Was it a bad situation?
It was not good. So yeah, they were throwing things at each other in the middle of the night and stuff. And I feared for my life at one
gosh.
Point.
Oh gosh. And then you're like, am I supposed to take the 2-year-old and run out of
that.
Here?
I've never gone into that kind of detail. Yeah.
Really? But like, that's like where you started off?
Yeah. It was a rough beginning. In professionally and personally. So
you're in the same house with this woman though,
yeah,
and her son.
Yeah. So, but that's, I got a break on rent, which cost me, I think my rent was $300 a month and I babysat when she worked.
Okay.
So we traded off like that. And then I would go and take the city bus down to Tootsie's Orchid Lounge to play at 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, because I wasn't allowed to be there in the dark at nighttime. My mom said, if I find out you did a shift there at night, because... So the story is, I go into Tootsie's Orchid Lounge with my mom and Pat, and there's a guy singing. There's nobody in there. I'm there like, can she get up and sing? And I'm just, oh my God,
your mom said that?
Oh my God, you guys.
Your mom was that mom? Your mom was a stage mom.
A little bit, yeah. Marnie met my mom. Yeah. And so I'm, you know, yeah, I said, okay, I'll get up and sing. And then the place fills up and it's just, people start shuffling in and they offered me a job playing for tips. So I made $15
a day. So because your mom said, can you get up and sing?
Yeah.
You got the job.
I got the job.
Being ballsy goes a long way.
People, she definitely was that. And so I got the job, and then now we're going, okay, well, you can make some cash doing that.
So first step covered. You go, first day you're there, you get the job?
I got the job. Yeah, that's place filled up and everybody was, you know, and there were the local musicians who were, you know, some of these characters back then, they were living in their cars in the alley.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it was just, it was a different
Were you scared a little bit?
Deal. A little bit, but I was also enamored and very excited because I was in Nashville. Like when I was growing up in Medicine Hat, Alberta, I was fascinated with Nashville and anything about Nashville and Tootsie's Orchid Lounge and the Ryman and all of these things. That it was like the land of Oz to me.
You get here. And you're like, it's Oz, but it's also super scary.
Right. Well, I didn't know to be scared, though. I saw the pictures all over the walls in Tootsie's, and I saw Patsy Cline's picture, and I saw all the scenes I saw in Coal Miner's Daughter and everybody.
You're like, I'm protected by the energy of country music.
Yeah.
You were.
I thought so. But then this local dude comes up to my mom, and you know, this is the day they offered me the job, and he says, she's real good, but let me tell you something, ma'am. Don't let your daughter come down here after dark. They'll find her body in a dumpster in the alley.
What?
So my mom's about to get in the car and drive back to Canada with Pat, right?
After you just got this job where your body could be in the dumpster in an alley.
And she's going to tell me I can't do this? No, she's not going to say that. She's like, what do I tell her? And so the deal was, here's the deal. You can take this job, but you can't do this at night. So
did you follow the instructions?
I did. And if they wanted me to cover for somebody's night shift, they had to drive me there and back. And like they... want somebody from the bar that we trusted and do like one of the bouncers or something.
He wasn't drunk.
Had to get in his car and drive, come and get me and take me down there. Like I couldn't be standing at a bus stop on Lower Broadway at midnight trying to get back to part of town with my guitar. I knocked some old ladies over with that guitar just because I'm not graceful. Like I can't tell you how many times I'd turn around on the bus and bang it into somebody. And
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That I just, I mean, at 18 years old, I mean, because yes, you're legally an adult, but like you're just coming into your adulthood. You know, you're coming out of being a child. You've had this childlike dream that's blossomed now, and now you are an adult, but you're still so young, and it's like now you're in this brand new place with all these, this potential and opportunity in front of you, but it's like, gosh, I have a daughter who's 4, and I'm thinking about like that would be in 14 years. And right now she's like, you know, she's just learning how to like come into the world. And like only 14 years from now, she could be you pursuing this dream. And it's like, I just see like your will and your spirit and your hunger and your passion and your dedication and the belief you had. That just takes so much heart to do something that big.
When you're younger, though, it's almost like ignorance is bliss.
It works in your favor.
It does, because I don't know that I would have the gonads to do some of that now, like taking that kind of risk. And it's like I had nothing to lose and everything to gain almost, you know.
And it's like you knew this is what you had to do.
Yeah, I was so passionate and so determined. And I prayed every night to God for 5 minutes every night, because that's what my pastor told me to do.
And 5 minutes was a lucky number?
It was the magic number.
Tipping
point. You
could
just do this every night for 5 minutes. But what I prayed for was, like, of course, world peace, and like every kid prays for mom and dad and everybody. I prayed for the determination and tenacity to not give up. It was always about not giving up. And I feel like ever since, it's just been like, I can't betray that little girl. You know what I mean? There have been times during my career where I've felt, you know, and I think we all go through these moments of feeling irrelevant or of being forgotten, or, you know, those big insecurities that every artist has, and those thoughts of maybe I just, you know, maybe I should just fade off into the sunset. And then I go, I can't do that to her. I can't do that to her. So, and don't make me cry by doing that.
I can't help it. Once I became a mom, like all this stuff just like hits my heart so hard, because to have a dream and to follow through with it and to like not give up on your little girl, that is so brave.
Yeah. And that's the thing that has kept me here.
Is your little girl in you.
Yeah. And you know, it's so true, because you can't, you evolve, your interests change, your tastes change, your life changes, but boy, it's hard to just abandon that person you once were that wanted this more than anything, and you actually got it.
You got it.
And then you start focusing on what you didn't get.
Oh.
And that's when you've got to start you've got to realign yourself and realize that, and I've been so grateful and I'm so lucky and I've achieved so much.
So much.
So much.
You've achieved so much.
And it's easy to forget that when you start playing the comparison game.
It's
compared
so
to this one,
hard
compared to that. And
to.
I did it today.
You did it today?
Ask my manager. I do it constantly.
What did you do today?
You go, well, it's not anything in particular. You just go, well, this person played three times on this radio station. I've only heard myself once in the last 24 hours. It's just whatever. It's so stupid.
But it's not though, because your brand is you.
But you get into that. It's into that way of rabbit hole of negativity, and you got to pull yourself back out, and then you start going down these paths of, well, maybe I should just, you know, but you can't
hang it up.
Yeah, but I think everybody goes through that.
Absolutely.
I'm being very vulnerable with you.
Thank you for sharing with me, Terry.
Oh my God, who are you?
I know. Everyone leaves my interview and I think they have a vulnerability hangover. They're like, share my whole life. Why did I do that?
You should go into therapy. I'll pay you for this next time.
I've done so much therapy, Terry. You don't even, I think.
You're good. That's why you're good.
I think it's because I have gone down to the well, the bottom of the drain. I live at the bottom of the drain in my emotions. And so it's fine. I've done a lot of healing. It's great. Tons of therapy. But it's like, we're all humans, you know, we're all like struggling with this. And especially as an artist, when you're putting yourself out there for people just to have decisions about you and thoughts about you and weigh in about you. And then like someone new comes out and it's like so much is happening behind the scenes that has nothing to do with you as a human being.
Right.
But yet as an artist, you feel like it's all about you personally.
Right. Yeah. You
know?
You can get caught up and bogged down by that kind of stuff. But you know, I think there was a time when I worried what people were thinking about me a lot. Now I just want to know they're thinking about me.
Is it a great house?
That's the quote of the day right there.
Perspective, sure. I mean, time changes everything.
I don't give
perspective.
A crap what they think. I just want to know they're thinking.
Oh, God. I love that.
Oh, God.
Terry.
So, you know.
So you don't care what they say?
No, I really don't.
No.
Well, that's also part of like being over 35. That's all you get.
Man,
the last 10 years has gone by fast.
It goes by faster and faster each year, right?
It really does. And, you know, I do think since I you know, got off of the major labels in Nashville in like 2010-ish, I've also been putting out records like one after the other, like every 3 years. And
just as you wish.
Yes. And one won the Juno for Country Album of the Year in Canada in 2012. And then I put out a covers record that I'm so proud of. It's called Classic. It's got all these country covers on it of old classic songs. And
there probably was like a soulful moment in your
loved
life.
Loved it. Yeah.
You picked all the ones you wanted.
Yes. And who else came and sang? Dierks Bentley sang one. Reba sang one with Tanya Tucker did Delta Dawn with me.
Stop it.
How many people don't know about that record?
Tanya Tucker do Delta Dawn
know,
on an
right?
album with
it
them.
It was crazy. It was just, oh my God.
And this is the thing. This is the thing about artists who like yourself. You're so phenomenal. You've had so many bucket list moments like this, but like artists don't remember that like you've done this album with these classics. You're singing Delta Dawn with Tanya Tucker.
It's cool.
You know?
But you know,
a lot of people don't know about it
because it flies under the radar a bit when you're not on a major label in Nashville and you're not getting all that press and you're not, you know, in everybody's crosshairs like you used to be. So a lot of that stuff gets lost and people don't know about it. It was so funny because Ashley McBride just randomly brought that album up to me. I'm like, you know about that album? She goes, oh, that was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. Well, I was like, well, somebody knows about the record. You know, it's like you have those doubts, those self-doubts creep in and then you make another record and you just do it anyway. And you start just doing it because you want to do it. But you also want people to know about it if you're putting that much time and
energy
and financial, you know, risk, you know, going into this stuff. You want people to know about it. But yeah, I've kept writing and putting music out and producing most of it myself since 2010, since a lot of people maybe thought that I don't know, went on a fishing trip or something.
You love it. I know. You're like a major fisher.
I am. Yeah. I love fishing. It's so much fun.
See, I need to find that love. I always find it a little boring. You know, it's the waiting game. You're patient. You have patience. And it's like the finesse of catching the fish, right? There's such techniques.
Yes. Oh, there's techniques and knowing where to go and what to use. And
how do you know the right spots to go?
It's a lot of practice.
Like, do you only fish in certain rivers? Because you are not.
Well,
rivers,
I fish
ponds?
On Lake Erie. I have a lake house in Canada on the Canadian side of Lake Erie, and so I've spent, you know, COVID, I really got into it because I had time, you know, so I spent like 3 months solid up there just learning about pike fishing. And then I've recently become even more into largemouth bass fishing, which I can do down here too, if I find the right spots, but you know, it's right out my back door there. So it's just easy for me to disappear for hours on end and never be heard from again.
Do you solve a lot of your problems out there fishing?
I don't think about anything. That's the only thing I do where, honest to God, like, managers called me because I got nominated for a CMA Radio Personality of the Year a couple years ago. And they were trying to call me to tell me I got the nomination. And I was nowhere to be found.
Gone fishing.
And Marnie says, she better be fishing right now. And that's exactly where I was. But no, I don't think about anything. It's the only thing I can do, honestly, where I'm not questioning
my entire existence.
The future, the past, the present, what's going on in my career, what's not going on in my career. I really am very, very present. And it's a meditative, just casting over and over again. It's just a meditative presence. It's in the moment, completely in the moment.
I think that is the whole point of meditation, because like, I used to get stressed out trying to like just sit and meditate and things, but like, you have to find the practice where your brain can stop. Because you have to let your brain have a moment to just like stop thinking. So then like whatever thoughts you were on the hamster wheel looping, they all go away. So then it's like they're not with such strength anymore. You know, they lose their power because you've let them all go. And so then when you come out of your vortex of fishing or whatever the meditative state is, for me it's yoga, it's like, oh, then you don't pick back up every single one of those obsessive thoughts. Only a few come back in.
Exactly.
Maybe only the ones that needed to come back.
Right. They still come back. And then I'm like, when can I go fishing again?
I got to get back out there.
Yeah. I mean, and unfortunately, that's a summer. It's very seasonal. So the rest of the year, I'm crazy. Pretty much certifiable.
Aren't we all, though?
I'm the most sane in the summer.
Should you get into ice fishing?
Oh, God. I'm sure most of the people in my life wish I would, but no. I'm a fair weather fisher woman.
Okay.
So, but the fun thing about fishing is like, I've actually now got some affiliations with tackle companies. They're putting me on their pro page and sending me free stuff, and like I'm tagging them in posts and stuff. So I feel like I'm like into the fishing world now.
Look at you.
Yes, Bro and Yamamoto and Reaction Tackle and some companies like that are like on
board.
I see
a fishing show coming your way.
Well, you know what? I could actually maybe in the future do that. Not this year.
Bring all your famous friends and go fishing with them.
You know, all my famous friends, because I hang out with so many famous people.
Or just bring yourself. Bring your dogs. Seriously, though. Speaking of famous friends, though, I mean, it's like you've toured with Reba. You've done stuff with Dolly. You've been on tour with George Strait. Like, Toby Keith, your post to him made me tear up.
Oh, my God. Oh, Toby.
I can't even.
You know, I think we knew he was sick, but then he did Vegas in December. And then I woke up that morning and I had a text from somebody. And then I turned on the TV. I was like, no. Like, I didn't know he was that close to gone. And I said that to a mutual friend. And Toby and I toured together for an entire year.
What was that like?
He felt like a big brother to me, you know, and he was so... he was such a good conversationalist. Like, you could ask him anything and he would always give you an honest answer. And I was ballsy about some stuff I asked him back
like
then.
What?
I can't tell you.
You have to.
I have to shoot you.
You have to tell me.
I can't tell you, but he gave me honest answers to everything.
Was it about your career?
Yeah, we talked a lot about that. And you know, when he had handpicked his opening acts, like he would pick them, and he said, publicly and at some media outlet when he was talking about it was the big Throwdown tour, and he said Terry Clark's the most underrated artist out there. And I was like, oh my God, you said that about me? That's so sweet. He was just a really good guy, and I think one of the best songwriters we've ever had,
truly.
his shows were fun. We had a lot of fun out there. We played practical jokes on each other. He was always playing basketball with the band and crew, my band and crew. And I have the same drummer I had on that tour to this day. And so wow. We, you know, we're reminiscing a lot about Toby and seeing the posts coming in and the things. That's where I do like social media, is the tributes that you can pay to somebody when, you know, they pass on, and you all of the love that you can feel from everywhere in the world for them. And it's just sad. Way too young.
It goes so fast.
Yeah.
Like life just flies by.
It does. It flies by. But what I loved, his spirit was him right to the end. Like him getting up in Vegas and seeing him hold his guitar up and saying, "We're going to crush it." You know, this is 2 months ago. I'm like, yeah, that's his spirit. And it's soaring somewhere now. And he was the epitome of just honest and unabashedly who he is, unapologetically who he is, and patriotic. He was so, everything everybody's been saying is
never
so
scared to take a stand for what he believed in either, which is hard to do.
Yeah. And I loved Kix and Ronnie's post about him, because they each had something to say. And I didn't hear anybody as eloquent as they were and how they described who he was. They just talked about how he was never afraid to be honest, tell the truth. He never backed down. He never wavered about anything. He was just very solid in everything he stood for.
How is someone like that? I aim to be like that.
Confidence.
But my emotions get the best of me. Yeah. And my fear of people hating me gets the best of me.
Yeah, me too. Like that people-pleasing thing in me.
You hate me now.
Oh my God, somebody's going to hate me.
I know.
I can't say this.
I know.
You know?
Where it's like, you just got to be yourself, which you are, Terry.
Well, thank you.
You are so yourself.
I'm also very politely Canadian in a lot of ways too, like we talked about before, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was part of the culture shock for me, was just coming to America. Where people were just more, it's a more aggressive culture, mm-hmm. like as far as how people, people are just more, a little more, you know, opinionated and stuff like that.
More
and
angry.
More the angry Americans. And the Southern culture, I had never had grits before. Mm. Just walking into a Cracker Barrel, I was I'd never had any of this food before.
What'd you think?
I still am not really, I don't eat grits.
What do you like to eat?
Biscuits are good.
Do you like butter and gravy?
I got into the white gravy with the sausage in it.
It's
because
solid.
That's not a Canadian thing.
Uh-huh.
I grew up on eating pierogies.
We all wonder why we have heartburn.
Right, I know.
Pierogies, is that a sandwich?
No.
What is a
pierogi? You don't know what a pierogi
is. What's a pierogi?
It's Ukrainian, but we eat them a lot in Canada. Do you eat gravy on your fries? Brown gravy?
Not really. Not brown gravy.
That's a Canadian thing.
I'm not a brown gravy girl.
You're not?
No.
We should try dipping it in that white gravy.
I just don't, I'm not really, even gravy, when I think about what's in the gravy, it's all the bits and stuff. When people say bits are in gravy, what bits?
Do you eat meat?
I do eat meat, but I don't like to think about it. I don't like to eat meat, but
okay,
I can eat meat.
I gotcha.
Because I'm just
she doesn't even want the bits from the meat and the gravy.
Do you like the bits?
Yes.
You like to eat the bits?
Oh God, I'll eat the fat. I'll eat my fat, your fat. Are you going to have that bone? I'll just gnaw on that too.
You love all the extra parts?
I'm that person that I'm are you going to eat that? Because put it on my plate. If you're not, my cholesterol is not good.
Do you eat giblets?
No, I will not eat that. Or liver, really.
Oh, liver? No.
Organs, I'm kind of off the organs.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, a liver, people love a liver. I'm that's what's processing all the shit out of your body.
I will donate an organ, but I do not want one, to ingest one.
Same. Not interested.
Everybody in this room is going,
now everyone's
what has happened
going to the bathroom to throw
interview?
Up.
I think we lost Marnie.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick.
I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so when was the moment you have all, your whole life has been geared up for your life that you're living? Like, you're one of those people that it's like, from the second you had thoughts about who you are as a human being to, you knew you wanted to be a country singer and you started putting steps in play to make that happen. You had a mother to support you. Mm-hmm. But like, as soon as you had real thoughts, this was your destiny. So it's like, what is it like? Your whole life has been this, and this has been your whole dream, and it's come true. What is it like? Since you've been in your dream your whole life, when did you know that your dream had come true?
I think after Better Things to Do became a hit.
So first single was a hit.
Yes.
Straight out of the gate.
Yeah.
How does that feel?
Oh, it was surreal. It was just like all of this planning and all of the sacrifice and the starving, literally
going,
you know,
and aloneness.
And I got married when I was 20.
Wait, you met someone in Nashville and
yes,
got married?
Yeah. And
who did you marry?
A fiddle player. And to protect the names of the innocent, I call him Starter Kit during my show because I don't want to.
Starter Kit marriage?
Yeah.
You know, when you're at 20.
He was more than a starter kit. We were married for quite a while, 7 years. I think 6 or 7 years.
Was it a nice marriage?
Yes, it was fine. We were just young.
Too young.
Very young. And And when things started happening in my career, we really grew apart and we were having some difficulties with communication and things leading up to that. So
who doesn't when they're in their 20s?
Yeah, that's if I were you, the song I wrote was about my marriage at that time. And I was talking to my friends about it and they were like, I would go to my friends for marriage counseling. It was free marriage counseling. So I would always call them when I was complaining and some had good advice, some had bad advice. And I wrote that song about talking to my friends.
What is the best advice? I actually have a friend who's struggling with her marriage right now, and I don't feel like I've been giving good advice to her because she's got a kid, and I'm like, you gotta fight for the marriage, you gotta fight for the kid, but like maybe that's not what you're supposed to do as a friend.
I think asking whoever you're talking to put yourself in your significant other's shoes.
Put
yourself in that other person's shoes for a minute.
Like me
truly.
As my friend?
No. If you're having trouble with your spouse, put yourself in his shoes just for a minute and honestly try and just look at it from that person's point of view. And then you can kind of not just be so insular in how you're thinking about, because a relationship is 50-50. Like you're responsible for 100% of your 50%. And
yeah,
they're responsible for 100% of their 50%.
Terry?
I know. I failed at math. I don't know why I'm bringing numbers into this.
You are 100%. You are 100% responsible for your 50% of the marriage.
Of the marriage. So,
if you're going to end the marriage, you got to end it as best you can.
But you also need to put yourself in your spouse's shoes and make sure you're looking at it from every angle instead of just your own.
But what if you just don't love them anymore, but you respect them as a human?
Yeah, that's hard. That's the tough thing. When that goes, it's hard to salvage that.
Can you bring the love back?
Some people do. With a lot of therapy and those whatever imago things they call them and workshops of some sort, I guess. But
how do you know when it's time to let it go, though? And are you glad you did?
I think if you've exhausted everything, I think I wouldn't be who I am today. If I'd have stayed in that, and I don't think it wasn't abusive. He was a lovely person. I have nothing bad to say about him at all.
It probably was nice to have that comfort when you were that young.
Him and his family, I might have wound up moving back to Canada and given up if it weren't for them, because I felt so lonely, so alone, so isolated from anything that I knew. Everyone, my whole family, I was alone here.
So you landed with a foreign country person.
Yeah, very good person. And we just parted ways and grew apart. And when my career took off, it was kind of the nail in the coffin that was already, it was a bit of a sinking ship. And it sort of was like somebody just, threw a 3-ton weight on that ship. And that was my career. It just sank it. And I don't blame my career. I just think that it just sped that process up.
For me as a friend who I have someone going through this situation you were in, What kind of support do you want from your friends when you are going through a divorce? Like, what, you don't want your friend telling you what to do, right? Because I've been the friend where I'm like, you need to get in therapy. You need to try to like salvage it for the kid. Yeah. You need to work on it. But I don't think that's working well.
I don't think telling them what to do is the answer. I think letting them process with you and
you just have to
actually
be there.
They will figure it out. Sometimes people just have to say something out loud, just a trusted source that they can count on not to judge them or try to fix it. They just want you to listen and they will start saying things and they'll be, oh my God, what did I just say? Well, I just answered my own question. And it's free therapy. A lot of times you got to pay a therapist to tell you these same things when you just have it's hard for friends to be unbiased though, because they love you and they're on your side always. They've always got your back. So that's the only thing, they're emotionally invested in where a therapist isn't. Well, we're going deep here.
I feel like you've been surrounded by great people, though. Like, you've picked great people.
My friends, my core group of friends that I have to this day, the ones that would help me bury the body, the ones that I would call in the middle of the night, are mostly people that I have known for 30 plus years.
Wow. That says a lot about you.
That I've known since I was in junior high with, like, since I was 12.
And wow.
Yeah, really.
So you're true blue.
Oh, for sure. They're not in any way, shape, or form associated with the music business.
Except for Reba. I mean, she's your bestie. I mean, she's kind of associated.
I love Reba, and I consider her a true friend.
I know.
I do.
And y'all like do grill outs.
But let me tell you something. Reba is no different than those girls that I've known my whole life.
She's a true blue. Person.
She is just not affected by any of that fame and that
you can tell.
She's so grounded.
She's like Toby Keith too, though. And like, she's just Reba. She just is who she is.
She cuts to the chase.
There's
no BS. There's no like, you know, floating around a subject. She'll just cut to the chase. And those are my friends. They're honest. And I just want honest friends. I want people who, don't look at me and want anything or think that I can help them do anything with, for their own career. It's opportunistic or people that I feel like are, you know, hangers on for any reason other than that they just like being around me because they like me as a person. I make them laugh for some reason, or we have a good time, or we'll have a bottle of wine and get down to the nitty gritty of life. And, you know, those are true friends. You know, you help each other. I've asked Reba for a lot of advice too. And, you know, and Susie Boggess is another one that I consider like a sister. Pam Tillis. There are a few women in the industry that are friends, but I'm not friends with them because of what they do. I just really like them as
people. And it's probably nice, though, that y'all have this career in common, though.
Yes, we can
to navigate together.
We can kind of try and dissect it a little bit together and try to and say things around each other that we can trust. It's a vault and that it doesn't go any further. So don't ask me what we talk about.
Okay. I mean, I just love that. I won't, but I just love it. I think it's so great. You're so awesome, Terry. I'll wrap up because I know you have so much press to do and you're looking fine. And I know when you say you look fine all day, you got to be showing it off and you got more stuff to do later. We got
Oh my
gosh. Let's talk about the main point of this whole podcast really fast.
We got through therapy.
I'm just talking about like you have Terry Clark Take Two happening where you have an 8-song duet project featuring special guests. Let's not forget Lauren Elena, Paul Brandt, Kelly Clarkson, Cody Johnson, Ashley McBride, Carly Pierce, Ben Rector, and Lainey Wilson's. This is also your 20th year celebrating the Opry because you were inducted in 2004 and now it's 2020. You have big shows coming up this year.
A lot of touring.
It's
going to be a busy year.
Talk about Terry Clark Take Two, though, really fast before we wrap up this interview because that's why we're here.
Take Two. Oh, wow. You know what? I talked to my manager, Clarence Spaulding, about this project about 5 years ago. He had been working on some stuff with Brooks and Dunn. You know, they've done Reboot and stuff like that. And a couple of artists have sort of done some things with newer artists. And then COVID happened, and I had a Christmas record that came out in 2020. And everything sort of got pushed by a couple of years, all these ideas we were talking about. So about a year and a half ago, we picked back up and started and went back in the studio and you know, just started re-recording, reimagining my hit songs, you know, with some newer artists and people that I wanted to work with and asked if they wanted to do it. And so Ashley McBride was
so awesome.
The first one. She's a very good friend. So she of course, is on Better Things to Do, which was my very first single. So
yes. Oh, great.
And Ashley's one of these people who's always talked about, you know, She's been a champion for me publicly and talking about how she was a teenager growing up. And she says, you know, I always felt different. And, you know, I wasn't like all the other girls. And I looked to you, you know, this girl in this rolled up T-shirt sleeves and a cowboy hat. And you know, that I want that she can do that. And I can do that, too. You know, and so it was so heartwarming to hear that I had some sort of an inspiration in her path. And we became friends. So she did a great job on it. We went in and we re-recorded these, and some of them, you know, the spirit of the song is hard to make it a whole lot different from what it is musically, but we reworked them, reimagined them, the arrangements a little bit different. I did Poor Pitiful Me with Lainey Wilson, and it's super fun.
How was that?
It's super fun.
I mean, yeah, Lainey,
she just came in and nailed it. She's so good.
She's so good. Like she's so country.
My 5-year-old self knew I was going to be doing this song.
I'm sure she said that. Did she say that?
I said 5.
She's like, I've been manifesting since I was 5.
She's so sweet.
Oh, and so this sweet. Like you, this has been her vision from the start, you know?
Yeah, you got to want it worse than anything else in the world. And
truly.
Look at her now. I'm glad we recorded her a year her over a year ago because I don't know what it would take to get her to show up. Now she's so busy. So I think the timing was right with that one. And she and I text back and forth from time to time. Every time she wins something, I congratulate her. So I'm texting her quite a bit.
She's winning quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Yeah. And
Lauren Elena.
Lauren Elena. Oh, my God.
Who could not love Lauren Elena?
I know, right?
She's the cutest, funniest, sweetest.
I just want to put her in my pocket. I know. I love her so much. She's so sweet.
I love her.
First time I worked with her was when Ashley and she and I did the Opry. When COVID was going on, there was no audience. We were one of the first ones to do that. And we showed up and we had never sung together. And it was right after Joe Diffie had passed and we did John Deere Green. We're out in the parking lot in pickup trucks, like practicing. We couldn't practice in a dressing room together. So we were out in the parking lot at the Opry rehearsing harmonies and stuff. And we were about to like do this thing. And it was like, oh my God. But she was just, she's just lovely. She's just, she'll just blurt. She's got no filter.
I love
That's my favorite thing.
I love her so much.
Yeah.
And then Ben Rector, he might be one of the funnier people.
Have you seen his Instagram?
I watch it just for his commercials.
Thank you for knowing Ben Rector because not everybody in the country format knows him, but
he's great.
He's freakishly talented. Like I'm talking genius.
Did you see his latest project he put out with like the Red Monster and stuff?
Oh yeah. The joy of music. So good.
So creative.
The Thanksgiving song. Have you heard his Thanksgiving song?
Maybe.
Oh gosh. It's huge.
He's a genius.
He is a genius. And he's him and Kelly Clarkson, like the two of them as singers and having both of them on this project. I'm like, don't make me stand next to them and ever sing anything.
How is it with Kelly?
Well, she hasn't done her part yet. We're still finishing it, but I cannot wait to hear what she does. She wanted to do If I Were You, and we re-recorded it. That one's a little bit of a different approach.
Okay.
You can do more with ballads than you can up-tempo.
Did you change some of them?
Yeah, like the Kelly Clarkson If I Were You track is, it kind of is like a country John Mayer kind of feel now.
Okay.
It's got a little bit more of that. It doesn't feel as ballady, but it didn't go completely off the rails either. Like some people are re-recording stuff and it's just a complete departure.
Take two?
Yeah.
Who's
but it's
departed?
It's not like you won't recognize the song.
Which that's kind of fun though to reimagine.
No, not like Better Things to Do, I Want to Do It All. Some of those are what they are.
Did we say who's doing I Want to Do It All?
Lauren is doing.
Oh, Lauren is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cody Johnson's on I Just Want to Be Mad. And what a duet that makes. It could have been a duet from the start. Like, it's a conversation about fighting with your significant other.
Yeah.
And he chose that one. We were going back and forth between a couple of songs, and he chose that one. And he said, who hasn't been there? And I'm like, yeah, this is going to make a really cool duet.
That's so awesome. Which one do you feel like is the most reimagined?
I'd say If I Were You and I Just Want to Be Mad, maybe the two most reimagined just because of the duet, the musical nature of If I Were You and the duet nature of the guy girl thing with I Just Want to Be Mad, because it is such a relationship song. Now That I Found You with Ben is great. It's Now That I Found You with Ben to me sounds like it could be a hit right now. It sounds like a whole new, like,
I suspect
as a
it
duet,
will be.
Like a Valentine's Day favorite, because it's such a love song and it's a nice duet. It makes a really nice duet. Like that one and the one with Cody are a guy girl. They sound like very natural that way.
How much fun did you have?
I'm having so much fun. I'm not done. I'm still in the midst of doing it. And you know, it's a blast. It's a blast being creative with something that's already lived out there so long and it's a puzzle trying to figure out how do we freshen this up without, you know, pissing everybody off by changing it too much. Cause I don't want to do that either.
We don't want to piss everybody off.
Yeah, right. Well, just some people, because somebody's going to say something. You ruined that song for me.
Hey, but remember, as long as they're talking. As long as they're talking.
What was it I said?
I don't care if they talk
about
what they were talking about.
I said, I used to worry about what people were thinking about me. Now I worry about whether they're thinking about me or not.
So, hey, stir it up, Terry. That's amazing. Terry Clark, take two. Okay, so that'll come out later.
It's going to be the end of May.
Oh, my gosh. This is so exciting. What touring can we look forward to?
Lots of touring this year.
You did a big Canada tour last year and it was amazing. Homecoming tour. Everyone loved it.
And then I took the summer off. I didn't do any of the outdoor
shows.
Take
a break.
I did. I took the summer off last summer.
Go fishing.
And I did. And this year, not as much fishing, more touring. And we have some really great shows on the books. A lot of fun stuff lined up. I can't wait to get out there. It's going to be, it's probably, going to be my biggest touring year since 1998 this year. Yeah, I was,
are you tired?
I was running through the schedule this year. It's not that it's going to be so much. It's just going to be good quality stuff.
Oh, so you're fired up.
It's going to be really nice. Yeah, I'm really, really fired up about it. And we're only halfway through booking it. So it's, and I'm already excited. It's going to be
30 plus years in and you're hotter than ever, Terry.
Oh, well.
In every sense of the word.
That.
In every sense of the word, you're on fire. Look at you. What's the key? What's the key to like keeping it going? And then we'll wrap up because I know you got to go. What's the key to keeping it going and keeping it fresh?
It's like a relationship. You have to keep it fresh. You have to do things that you feel passionate about. You have to remind yourself how grateful you are, how lucky you are that you, and when somebody comes up to you and says your music saved my life or it made such a difference, just take that in and realize that you're bringing people together. You're making a difference, just showing up and doing a show that makes them happy, that mends their broken heart for an hour and a half, that, the last time I saw you was with my husband and he passed away, or we met at your show 30 years ago and he's not here anymore. But, and I'm like, oh yeah, he is. He's going to be sitting in that chair next to you. You know, you got to realize that you're, it's bigger than music. And if you can find that purpose in it and know that you're making a difference, I think that that's the stuff, that keeps me fueled and keeps me going too. You know, as long as I feel like it matters, and somebody's really getting something meaningful from it, I'm going to keep doing it. It's not so much about, oh, me. I want number one records. I want more money. I want more this. I want that. I want all the accolades. It's, I want to know connection. I'm making a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as long as they're showing up, I'm going to show up. And if that ever changes, then that's my cue to go get in the boat and take my rods and reels and go do what I do, catch the fish, scare all the fish in Lake Erie. Just scare them all.
I love it so much. I always wrap up with Leave Your Light, which you've left so much inspiration. But it's basically, what do you want people to know? Just a little touch of inspiration, a nugget of inspo for everyone listening.
Just never be afraid to be who you are. There's only one you. God made you just the way you are. Don't follow anybody else's path, anybody else's image, anybody else's light. Follow your own, and I think that the rest will follow. Authenticity.
I love it. Terry Clark, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. This is a dream come true for me, so thanks for making my dreams come true.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
That was fun.
Yay.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtime's a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.